18. Hear these words. During the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. A man with his wife and two sons went from Bethlehem of Judah to dwell in the territory of Moab. The name of that man was Elimelech. The name of his wife was Naomi. And the names of his two sons were Malchon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah. They entered the territory of Moab and settled there. But Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died. Then she was only left alone with her two sons. They took wives for themselves, Moabite women. The name of the first was Orpah, and the second was Ruth. And they lived there for about 10 years. But both of the sons, Malchon and Chilion, also died. Only the woman was left without her two children and without her husband. Then she arose with her daughters-in-law to return from the field of Moab, because while in the territory of Moab, she had heard that the Lord had paid attention to his people by providing food for them. She left the place where she had been, and her two daughter-in-laws went with her. They went along the road to return to the land of Judah. Naomi said to her daughters-in-law, "Go, turn back, each of you to the household of your mother. May the Lord deal faithfully with you, just as you have done with the dead and with me. May the Lord provide for you so that you may find security, each woman in the household of her husband." Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. But they replied to her, "No, instead we will return with you to your people." Naomi replied, "Turn back, my daughters. Why would you go with me? Will there again be sons in my womb that they would be husbands to you? Turn back, my daughters. Go. I am too old for a husband. If I were to say that I have hope, even if I had a husband tonight, and even more, if I were to bear sons, would you wait until they grow up? Would you refrain from having a husband? No, my daughters, this is more bitter for me than you, since the Lord's will has come out against me." Then they lifted up their voices and wept again. Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth stayed with her. Naomi said, "Look, your sister-in-law is returning to her people and her gods. Turn back after your sister-in-law." But Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to abandon you, to turn back from following after you. Wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. Wherever you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord do this to me and more, so if even death separates me from you." When Naomi saw that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped speaking to her about it. I love the story of Ruth. In fact, I love it so much, it got me kind of in trouble when I was in seminary because I misunderstood an assignment. I was being taught Hebrew Testament class by a rabbi, and he set as the assignment to write a paper on some of the texts that he'd been studying. I misunderstood the assignment, and I wrote about Ruth, which was not on the list of texts we'd been studying. But he gave me a pass anyway, because he said I wrote so passionately about her. The story of Ruth is about four things: disruption, displacement, death, and dynasty. And we're going to look at that over the next 2 weeks. I was going to say 4 weeks. You're all like, no. Next 2 weeks. There's a famine in Judah. Famines displace people. Famines disorganize people. They cause chaos in people's lives. Famine is also a popular storytelling model in Scripture. There is a famine that sends Joseph's brothers and his father to Egypt to be reunited with Joseph. This idea of using things like famine to move people around is to help us understand how disorientating something is. And in particular, how disorientating it is to leave your family. Naomi, her husband, and her two sons leave their home in Judah. And they go to Moab. Now, what's interesting about Moab is the home of Israel's bitter enemy. So they are going in to enemy territory in order to save themselves from the famine. It's a bit like, do we die of starvation or do we face the enemy and maybe die at their hands? What is the better option? I can't imagine being Ruth and Naomi and her husband trying to make this decision for them and their sons. What must it be like? How awful must it have been in Judah for them to actually think that going to the land of their enemies was a better option? When I was in pastoral ministry, I worked with two congregations that did refugee programs. The first one had been doing it for a long time. In fact, their first refugees that they ever worked with were Vietnamese boat people. And they have been working with refugees ever since. When I left that congregation and went to a congregation in Chilliwack, the Syrian refugee problem exploded, and they said, we would like to help. You've done this before. How do we do it? And so we brought in two refugee families from Syria. I can't imagine how awful it was that you would leave everything behind you and go to a strange land where you know no one. All you have is the contact name of a group of people who you have never met, who you are hoping are waiting at the airport for you when you land. I know that things were really bad when they were in Syria because I took the kids and their dad down to the library when they first settled in, when the first couple of weeks of them settling in, I went to the library with them. I took them there because, you know, the library is a great place. They're full of amazing resources. Librarians are amazing people. In fact, the librarians in the area were already gearing up for this influx of Syrian refugees because they already had Arabic books on the shelves waiting on them coming. They were so amazing and so supportive. So we're in the library. The kids are having a great time. We're encouraging them to pick up books, picture books with words, with English in them, so that they would be able to work on their English a little more. And as we left the library and we're walking out of the library, there had been an incident a few blocks away involving a stabbing, which had meant that the RCMP helicopter was up in the air, kind of directing whatever was going on the ground. And those kids saw that helicopter and they hit the ground like this, hands over their heads. Because in Syria, Helicopters mean only one thing: gunships. I thought to myself, what was your life like when you left your home country? How awful must it have been for you to know that you would have to cut ties with all of your family and probably not see them for many years, and go to a strange and foreign land where you are not sure that you are welcome, and try to build a life. And that's the story of Naomi and her family. Now, the men in this story are kind of character actors. They're kind of like, they're there. They're part of the reason we're kind of moving. They help move the story along, but the story's not really about them. Maybe that's why it's one of my favorite stories in Scripture, because the women are not the character actors. The women are the main stars. But the men die off. We don't know why they die or how they die, but the men die off. And Naomi is left with Ruth and Orpah, her two daughters-in-law. Now she is in a foreign land with no male support. Now, in the Middle East at that time and place, if you were a woman and you had no male relatives to look after you, there were not a lot of options about how you survived unless you were very rich. I'm not sure that Naomi and her family were particularly rich because they had to flee during the famine. The options for women were very limited. So one was that you got taken in by your family. So you would hope that a brother or an uncle or a nephew might take you in and let you be part of their family. The other was begging. And the other one was prostitution. Not a lot of options out there. Not unless you had money. And so Naomi knows this. She knows that life is going to be tough. But she's also heard that there is food in Judah. And she figures that maybe she might have some family who will take her in. She's not sure they're going to take these Moabite women in. But she hopes they might take her in. So she tells her two Moabite daughters-in-law, go home to your families and ask them to take you back in. That's probably Orpah's and Ruth's best chance of survival, is for them to go home and see if their male family members will take them in. Now, Orpah decides that she will eventually go back. After much debating back and forth with Naomi, Orpah goes, I'll go back. I'll risk going back and hope that my family takes me in. But Ruth clings. Ruth clings to Naomi and says she will stay. Now, Naomi and her family have been living in the land of her enemies, the Moabites. And now, but they had male protection. But now, here they are, they're deciding to return to Judah, where Naomi may have protection, but Ruth certainly doesn't. And there's a reason Ruth doesn't have protection. This story is written around this, is set in the same time frame that the prophets Ezra and Nehemiah are preaching in Egypt, or in Judah. And in Judah, Nehemiah and Ezra are demanding racial purity. Nehemiah and Ezra are demanding that all foreign women and their children be kicked out of the country, that they be exiled. And here we have Naomi bringing a foreign pagan woman into Judah with her. Naomi knows that Ruth's chances are pretty slim of surviving because the authorities in Judah are going to cast Ruth out. just as they are doing with all of the foreign women and their children. Because Ezra and Nehemiah believe that the dynasty of Israel is going to be built on this pure bloodline. And you can't have any contamination. You can't have any foreigners. It feels a bit like some of the things we're hearing in the world right now. We can't have contamination. We can't have foreigners. But Ruth says probably one of the most beautiful pieces of scripture that there is in response to her mother-in-law. You might have even heard this at a wedding or two. But Ruth's response to her mother-in-law are these words. Wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. Wherever you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. Your identity in the Middle East in that time and place was all about your family. That's why Naomi urges the girls to return to their home, their original families. Without family, you are nothing. You are unprotected. You are out in the wilderness all by yourself. But Ruth stands her ground with her mother-in-law and says those beautiful words. But in saying those beautiful words, which, as I say, are often used in weddings, which I find quite interesting when you think about the greater context of the story of Ruth. When she says those words, she is saying, I abandon my family. I abandon my Moabite family and my brothers and my sisters and my mother and my father. I abandon them. I no longer believe they're my family. And the gods that we have worshipped, they are no longer my gods. You, Naomi, you are my family. You are the only family I have. And the God that you worship, the God of my husband, and the God of my husband's father, that is my God now. And I will abandon everything to come with you to Judah and face whatever is in Judah for us. To abandon everything, to be disconnected, to be unfamilied, to choose to leave your birth family in order to be with this woman is a monumental moment in Ruth's life. It is, interestingly, also the moment when God steps into the framework of this story. Because Naomi is angry and bitter at God. When she speaks about God, she speaks about God being vengeful against her for punishing her. In fact, in the pieces, in the story between today and next week's ending of the story of Ruth, Naomi renames herself the Hebrew word for bitter. She is so angry at God, she is bitter. And she names herself bitter. But Ruth lets us see another possibility of God. Ruth chooses in this moment to trust in this foreign God, to trust the God of her husband and her father-in-law and her mother-in-law. She chooses this moment to trust in God, and in trusting God, she chooses hope. And in choosing that, she is also abandoning everything else. She has no option now but to go forward. She has no option now but to go to Judah, to be an enemy in Judah, to be someone that Nehemiah and Ezra are saying need to be cast out in order to create this pure line. But she's going to do it because she has chosen Naomi's God. And in that moment, we actually see God acting in a very relationship between human beings. This is not the God of separating seas, moving mountains, and feeding 5,000. This is the God of social interaction and relationship between people. This is the God inside me speaking to the God inside you. This is the light of our divinity speaking to one another and saying, I will trust. And that's where the story ends this week. It ends with Ruth trusting that God has something in mind for them. And if you can imagine, we watch the two women walk out of Moab, their feet directed towards Bethlehem, not knowing what awaits them in that land. And what awaits them, we'll find out next week. Because we're going to finish the story. We're going to find out what awaits them when they get to Judah. And we're going to see whether God is indeed with them. And whether the story of the dynasty is the story of Ruth and Naomi, or the story of Ezra and Nehemiah. Let's take a moment of quiet reflection.